Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science and music from Austin, Texas. I'm Michael Brennan. This is our final episode of the 22. So it's bittersweet, but we've got an awesome show for you. First off, I want to thank everyone who's made this show possible over the years. The scientists, the musicians, and my colleagues at EarthSky. EarthSky is focusing our efforts right now on creating the best new media and online content possible. So we hope you'll visit us often at earthsky.org. So let's get into it. This week, the ALMA Space Telescope was unveiled in Chile. Deborah Bird is here to talk about the upcoming equinox, and I've got some highlights from South by Southwest Interactive Festival, including the 100-year Starship, Elon Musk, and some of my favorite scientist soundbites from over the years. Stay tuned for the whole show. We got great music for you, too. Here's your scientist soundbite.
400 years ago, Galileo took a pair of eyeglasses and took the two lenses that are side by side and put one of them in front of the other and created something called a telescope. And then when he took the telescope and looked up at the sky, he made a fantastic number of discoveries. It's the beginning of the subject of astronomy. He discovered that Jupiter has moons. He discovered that our moon has mountains and valleys, very much like the Earth. He discovered that the planet Venus is going around the sun.
If you want to figure out who that gentleman genius is, you're going to have to stick around till the end of the show. Telescopes have come a long way since Galileo first put two eyeglasses together. The ALMA Space Telescope was unveiled this week in the Atacama Desert in northern Chile, and EarthSky was there to cover the event. More on that in a minute, but first, Song of the Week is Dead Sound by the Ravenettes.
Yeah.
That was Dead Sound by the Ravenettes. As of March 13th, the ALMA telescope in northern Chile is now officially online. ALMA is the most ambitious and complex Earth-based observatory ever undertaken. Earthsky's Emily Howard and Martha Morales were in Chile's high desert at an altitude of 16,500 feet to cover the event. Here's Deputy Project Scientist Allison Peck talking about what differentiates ALMA from other Earth-based observatories.
So ALMA is a fantastic new telescope for a number of reasons. Firstly, it's an interferometer. This means that it's comprised of a number of antennas rather than just one big glass mirror. And it observes at submillimeter wavelengths, which means that rather than just detecting light coming from nearby objects, we actually detect radiation from molecules, which gives us a good grasp of chemistry that's taking place in objects outside of our galaxy, outside of our solar system. ALMA is being constructed in a very harsh environment. This is harsh for people, but it's fantastic for astronomy. The reason is that we are above most of the atmosphere at 5,000 meters, and what atmosphere there is above us is very dry because we're in the Atacama Desert, which is one of the driest places on the planet. The main enemy of millimeter or submillimeter astronomy is not light, like it is for optical telescopes, but rather water. Water in the atmosphere absorbs the light that's coming down. And so having a location like this, high in the mountains, up in the desert, means that your sensitivity is much, much greater than it would be anywhere else in the world.
That was Allison Peck, Deputy Project Scientist of the ALMA Telescope. ALMA came online this week and is the fastest, most powerful Earth-based telescope ever. ALMA will be able to see up to 12 billion years back in time. For more on the ALMA Telescope, visit earthsky.org. Earthsky 22, 22 minutes of science and music from Austin, Texas. I'm here with Deborah Bird, and we're going to talk about the equinox. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, the equinox is coming up on March the 20th. It's kind of an early equinox this year. The time is 11:02 UTC, so that's 11:02 Greenwich Mean Time. That's the time in London. For us in the United States, that means about 7:02 Eastern Time or 6:02 a.m. Central Time, so before dawn for some of us on the 20th is when the equinox occurs.
Okay, so to back it up a little bit, what is an equinox?
Well, you have to go back to imagining the sky the way the ancients imagined it. So the ancients believed that the Earth was the center of the universe. Of course, we know today that's not true, but you can kind of flip your perspective into thinking about that. And when you do that, you can think about the equator that goes around the center of the Earth, and you can project that equator onto the dome of the sky, this imaginary dome of sky that's surrounding us. So an equinox is what happens when the sun is on that celestial equator. So if you were standing at the equator of the Earth on that day, on March 20th, you would find that the sun is directly overhead at noon for you on the day of an equinox. So at this equinox, the vernal equinox or the March equinox, or what we in the northern hemisphere call the spring equinox, the sun is moving northward. So it's crossing the celestial equator from south to north. And of course, it's, you know, for us in the northern hemisphere, that means the beginning of spring. The days are continuing to get longer. We're moving into the wonderful spring season, and after that, the summer season.
Great. So on the 20th, is there anything that we should look out for in particular in the sky?
Yeah. The cool thing about an equinox is that, as I said, on the day of the equinox, the sun is on the celestial equator. And the celestial equator, with respect to your horizon, no matter where you are, the celestial equator intersects your horizon at due east and due west. So if you stood outside at sunrise or sunset on the day of the equinox, and you had this favorite place that you like to observe the sky, you could note the position of due east or due west You know, stand outside at sunrise or sunset, note the position of the sun on the horizon, note it with respect to familiar landmarks in your favorite observing spot, and you've got yourself situated forevermore in that spot with respect to the sky.
Great. So I understand that equinox is important to different cultures. Can you tell us why and what cultures?
Yeah, I mean, all throughout time, of course, people have marked the passing of the seasons on Earth, and the equinox, different cultures have noted the position of the sun, the sunrise and the sunset with respect to the horizon, and so noted, you know, these special times of year when the sun is setting in this particular location. Midway between these solstices where the sun is at its farthest north or farthest south on your horizon at sunrise or sunset, this is the midway point between those two. So ancient peoples definitely noticed that there was this time, this equinox time. You know, so throughout time, throughout history, throughout human history, people have related to this particular equinox, at least for us in the Northern Hemisphere, as a time of new beginnings. And that's really cool for us right now, isn't it, Mike? Since this is our last Earth Sky 22, and we're going to have some new beginnings ourselves. So, for example, in Chinese philosophy, the equinox was associated with the color green, the sound of shouting, the wind. Facing east in Chinese philosophy was an association with this equinox, and that's because the east is the direction of the sunrise, and the sunrise, you know, brings the new day. So this equinox has always been associated with new beginnings of all kinds.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much, Deborah.
Mike, I've really appreciated you having me on, and best of luck to you and all of you folks listening out there. Thank you. And please do come to earthsky.org.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. Here's a song for the equinox. This is Day Glow by Brazos.
No shapes in the clouds, the hungry fish for miles around. Upstream jumping out of the water, gills in the air. I got many people to thank, but I can't write letters. I can't write letters. My friends on the edge of the old graveyard. Boxes play and jug of wine, the kind of wine that you don't mind spilling, that you don't mind spilling. Well, I fill out the forms and I make my death come slowly, one at a time, some kind of record I'm rolling. You best be sometimes, she said, but you can't start until you're ready. Yet it seemed to be controlled somehow, pulled by fingernails and eyelashes and other innocent parts. We talk about dreams a lot. She reads the fortunes out loud. I think it's funny and I go stay with her. Stay with her.
was Dayglow by Brazos. In 1969, astronaut Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon. Earth's guy's Jorge Salazar interviewed him a few years ago, and he talked about sending humans to Mars.
As you look out into the night sky, where would you say that humans need to go next, and why?
Well, I think we need to go places that we haven't been, cycling in Earth-Moon space, long-duration exploration modules that can fly by comets, station keep with Orion spacecraft at near-Earth objects, the asteroid Apophis. We could visit it briefly, and we could put our exploration modules in by 2022, perhaps, on the moon Phobos of the planet Mars. We could put that exploration module there, landing, and enhance it in an unmanned capacity so we could visit it in 2025, 27, 29 for visits that will help us prepare the Martian surface for the arrival of settlers sometime in the early 2030s.
Buzz Aldrin isn't alone in his vision of the future of human exploration. Here's Elon Musk, co-founder and CEO of SpaceX, during his South by Southwest keynote this week.
I do personally want to step foot on Mars, but honestly, I would be doing this even if there was no, even if I knew there was no chance of me going to Mars, but it, because I think it's just important that we are on a path to getting there. I would like to go at some point. I'll go if I'm certain that SpaceX will be fine without me, and that path will continue. Some people may have heard the joke I've made before, which is like, I would like to die on Mars, just not on impact, you know.
The 100-year Starship is a mission to make the capability of human travel beyond our solar system a reality within the next 100 years. Astronaut Dr. Mae Jemison, astronomer and co-founder of the SETI Institute, Dr. Jill Tarter, and Star Trek's LeVar Burton met at South by Southwest Interactive to discuss the future of space travel. Here's a few of my favorite moments from that discussion.
We're on the verge of being able to tell you where to look in the sky to see Earth 2.0, another Earth-like planet in orbit around a star like the Sun at a distance where maybe the temperature on the surface could support liquid water and life. And when that happens, I can't imagine that the world isn't going to suddenly say, really? Does anybody live there? Can we go there? And that's where the 100-year Starship and SETI are concerned. We're trying to answer those questions. Is anybody else out there? And can we ever go there?
Maybe. That which we imagine is what we tend to manifest. Time is collapsing. That gap is getting shorter between that which we imagine and that which we produce.
We don't tell kids, and we don't even tell ourselves anymore, that the future can be better. So one of the things that we've come up with 100-year Starship, that we believe pursuing an extraordinary tomorrow creates a better world today. An extraordinary tomorrow, not just a little bit better than we have now, but something that is a radical improvement where everyone on this planet benefits and shares in the wealth. Right now, in this world, we're the most materially rich than we've ever been. We have more capabilities and capacities than we've ever had, yet we have this discourse of scarcity. And what we really need to be working on is a discourse of abundance for all. And what 100-year Starship is about is how do we have this abundance for all?
Yes.
Thank you.
That was a couple of clips from the 100-year Starship discussion from South by Southwest Interactive Festival. One of my favorite interviews over the years was one Lindsay Patterson conducted with Leon Lederman. Here's Nobel laureate particle physicist Leon Lederman describing the elusive Higgs boson, or God particle.
All you can do is remember Alice in Wonderland and the Cheshire Cat. The Cheshire Cat is smiling and sitting on a tree, and in front of Alice's astonished eyes, the Cheshire Cat slowly disappears, but it leaves behind a smile. That's poetic, and maybe nature is truly poetic too, because we could imagine looking at it, and it's spinning, and it's producing effects on other particles, influencing them. But one of the things it doesn't have is a size. It doesn't have a size, but you don't see wind, but you experience its effect. There are many things that are invisible to our eyes, but which we know exist.
That was Nobel laureate particle physicist Leon Lederman. And that's our show. Thank you for listening. For more on the science or the music you heard, visit earthsky.org. I want to give a special thanks to my colleagues who helped make this program possible over the years. Deborah Bird, Chris Comfort, Eleanor Imster, Emily Howard, Martha Morales, David Callejas, Joni Hall, Eddie Campos, Ryan Britton, Lindsay Patterson, Beth Lebwohl, Tomas Mendez, and Luis Castilla. And special thanks to Jorge Salazar, who helped start this program and hosted it for a long time. Thanks to all the listeners and the radio stations that played the program. Until we meet again, be good to one another. I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. Now let's make the future great.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much hype, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know.